LinuxQuestions.org presents LQ Radio, the number one online radio broadcast focusing on Linux and open source. And now, LQ Radio, open talk about open source.
Hello, and welcome to the latest edition in the LQ Radio interview series. Today, I have with me James Turner and Deanne LeBlanc, both former senior editors for SysCon and Linux World magazine. Thank you for joining me.
Actually, just to correct it, I'm a senior editor and Deanne is gaming editor, right?
Yeah, my last name is LeBlanc.
Oh, okay. Thank you both for the correction. thanks for joining me, James and Deanne.
Yeah, we're just going to pest you through this whole thing.
I'm sorry?
We're just going to pest you and correct you through this whole thing.
Oh, yeah, feel free to correct away. Before I jump into the interview, I'd like to have both of you tell us a little bit about yourself. Things like how long you've been running Linux, what you do for employment, how you got involved with Linux World magazine, and really anything else that you think is important. Deanne, why don't you go first?
Okay. I got involved with Linux about 11 years ago, something like that. Whatever I say, it's through my husband. People sneer at me, but it's mostly that he was using it, and it was, you know, pretty brand new. It was still, you know, installing individual files and stuff from floppy disks, and so I kind of watched him over his shoulder, going, "What the heck are you doing?" And then for a while there, in the middle, he actually went over to doing most of the Windows stuff, where I started specializing in Linux. So now he actually comes to me with questions. We kind of took turns there. I do computer books, and I do articles, and I do training, and I do all kinds of things. My latest book is Linux for Dummies. It's on the sixth edition now, but I kind of gain all trades, but I kind of stick to the Linux space, so I specialize in that.
Okay. And how long ago did the latest Linux for Dummies come out?
It came out earlier this year, actually, just around in February. It's got six different distributions on it.
Nice. And the obligatory, what distribution do you use?
I use Fedora Core, partially because I am by far the most familiar with Red Hat, being an RHCE.
Okay.
The book includes coverage of an actual ISOs of Fedora, Mandrake, SUSE, Linspire, Zandros, and Nopix.
No, pretty comprehensive.
So I'm pretty familiar with a wide range of stuff. I've covered Gentoo a lot in the past, so I've kind of done the gamut, but I kind of stick with Fedora now because that's just what I'm most familiar with.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
Not at the moment.
Okay. Thanks. And on to you, James.
Well, I've been in the industry since 1980. And first exposure to Linux was actually at MIT, hanging out with people there. It wasn't Linux then, it was version 7 Unix. I consider it all one long chain of POSIX-compliant operating systems. And I, in fact, got my first StarNIC machine in 1984 when I acquired a Tandy Model 6000, which was a Motorola 68000 box, and actually have my own Usenet node in 1984. Have kind of been using Unix and Solaris and AIX, AIX 5, a BSD 5, sorry, not BSD HTT 5, on 3B2s. So I've kind of been using Unix throughout my entire career. I, in fact, worked for Solborn Computer for a while, who was a Sun reseller of Spark back when they were doing that. Then I kind of took a career change, and I've also always been into object-oriented languages, which is through Lisp and things like that. And then I took a career change and became the web manager for the Christian Science Monitor, which, if you're not familiar with it, is not a religious paper. I always have to say that first. It's a six-time Pulitzer Prize-winning international paper published in Boston. And through that, started pitching stories downstairs to the editorial staff and eventually started writing a number of articles for them on a wide variety of subjects. I covered the 1980 New Hampshire primaries for them for a while for the website. Eventually had a regular biweekly column with them covering the internet, and then eventually left them but continued to write. And have now written two books on Java development, both out from SAMS. One is Spets Kickstart, just to push my most recent one. And then eventually came to, you know, I do a lot of freelance writing. I've written for Wired, I've written for Processive Magazine, I've written for, obviously I write wrote for Linux World. I was one of the two initial editors who came on board to found it.
Okay. And anything else you like then?
No, I mean, that's it for all, except if you go to my website, you can see my really cool 19-inch rack I've got in my
You want to give the URL for that?
Office. It's www.blackbear.com. Or actually, if you click on my name on my blog, it takes you right to the picture.
Okay.
And actually, my picture in front of the rack is on my blog. Everyone needs to have a 19-inch 42U rack in their upstairs office.
I have a 19-inch rack, but it's only a quarter rack. It's a 10U.
So you can have rack envy.
My rack is taller than me. But I'm only 5'2", so.
Great. And to answer your question ahead of time, I run my web server, which is Coload outside of my house, runs, I believe it's still back in the world of Red Hat 7, just because it's what they threw on it. It might be Red Hat 9 now. And I go through distributions on my laptop like peanuts.
Yes, yeah,
because I write about it. But currently I'm running Gen 2 on my laptop. And if you want to know why, go read my old Linux World columns, because I talked at length. In fact, the last column coming out in the last issue of the magazine, not to plug the magazine, but the last issue of the magazine that we're going to be involved in.
The June issue.
Has an article on Gen 2 running on my laptop.
Okay, great. So let me give just a cursory overview of the situation as I understand it for those listeners who may not be familiar with it. And then I'd like your comments.
Okay.
I know that in a heated situation like this, it's easy to get misquoted or you hear or read a lot of skewed articles. And I wanted to give you both a chance to get your story out there unedited and in your own voice. So to start things off, a little over a week ago, Maureen O'Gara released an article entitled "Who is PJ Pamela Jones of Groklaw.net?" The article was inflammatory at best and really violated some basic journalistic principles. At that point, a few of the editors at Linux World magazine expressed that they could no longer work for an organization that was ran like that. Some editors had already wanted SysCon to sever ties before this incident, as I understand it. So this was really more the straw that broke the camel's back more than it was just a single isolated incident. Adding insult to injury, O'Gara was paid by SysCon, and the contributors to Linux World magazine were not. At this point, the SysCon publisher, Fuat, agreed to sever ties with O'Gara, and things seemed to be getting back on track for you guys. Then, on the 14th, seemingly in a response to the interview with Fuat in Free Software magazine, the entire senior editor staff resigned. Is that a good summation of what happened, and can you add any more details?
I would call that a very good summation. It was definitely a straw that broke the camel's back thing. We had a lot of discussions and downright arguments about this, about her content for a long time on both the internal mailing list and in person. A number of us have been, for various reasons, making sure to attend the various Linux World Expo shows, and that's where we tend to meet up with the people from SysCon. And so lots of in-person and virtual conversations over this, trying to explain our position. And go ahead.
Yeah, I wasn't saying anything, but I will comment. There were really two issues involved before this thing really broke. One is the way that a lot of people weren't clear on the fact that although we had almost entire control of the Linux World site, or sorry, the Linux World print magazine, we had almost no control over what bought on Linux World site, because the way the SysCon system works is it cross-publishes material from all the different sites to try and get cross-traffic going.
It's
so
heavily automated, really.
Right.
Okay.
So as a result, there were really two issues going on. There were some articles we saw go by Maureen, that we just said, this is just stuff we don't want on the site because it's biased. And or even if it's not blatantly violent, it's just not talking to our audience. And as the editors of the magazine, editors of a publication, you know, you're not going to see Microsoft Developers Journal run a piece called, you know, Microsoft is the worst development environment on Earth. Or they might, but they will, but you know, usually you're writing toward your audience. So to have this material coming on our site that was, in a lot of cases, very negative to Linux, was, and not in our editorial control, was a problem. And then there was some material that came on the site that was just bad journalism. I mean, even before this one, there were pieces that you could just look at and say,
this is press release.
Yeah, I was going to say,
yeah,
some of them
seem like press
releases.
Or it's telling exactly one side of the story.
And I want to make it clear that we, as much as I'll just speak for myself here, as much as I do feel like a cheerleader sometimes, I always make sure to address, anyone can look on Slashdot and see how I've been roasted in the past. I have no problem with addressing what I think are bad Linux products or negative sides to the whole thing.
Right.
It's not that we objected to the negativity. It's that if you're going to talk, you know, I always try to address negativity with an attitude of, this can be better, and here's some ideas.
Right. I mean, if you go look at a piece I did last year called, "Why," basically saying, is Linux ready for the laptop? And I basically came out and said, no. And I got the most atrocious roasting by the community.
I bet they didn't call you the names they called me.
No.
Well, we can trade and see who's been more lightly flamed. But the point is, you know, I wrote a piece, an online piece a while back called "What's Wrong with the Open Source Community." You know, we are very critical when it's appropriate to the community. But the problem with Maureen's material was it just wasn't good journalism.
Okay, and that's a good point.
Yeah,
to make.
Yeah, she kind of said what was. I felt like I was reading, and sometimes I had seen the same press releases. So it's like, okay, she's just basically quoting from Sco's press release with no additional information.
Right.
You know, no other side of the story. Lazy journalism, really.
And
anyway,
when the press release that I saw on your blog, James, said the
yeah.
entire senior editor staff.
Right. The reason we didn't name names there is there are certain people that, because of the relationship with their employing companies,
okay.
are not allowed to make public statements.
So can you tell us who will be leaving and who will be staying?
What? Yeah.
Can you tell
well,
us who,
could,
in fact, will be leaving?
I can tell you that with the exception of one editor that we have not been able to get in touch with, everyone is leaving.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 12, 14 people.
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
so it's not just even the senior editor staff. It really is pretty much everybody.
Right.
Right. It's just that it broke over a weekend, and trying to find everybody was
just tough to track.
You know, there are even people at SysCon, you know, key people at SysCon who were unavailable and didn't even know about this.
Right. Oh. One of them was in Istanbul.
Okay.
One of the other people involved, his wife got very sick last week. I was recovering from spinal surgery.
That's some bad timing there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of people just that didn't even know what was going on.
Right. I have to say, though, if you're going to go through this kind of a crisis, being on Percocet really helps.
Some of us had to go cold turkey.
Was this a decision that you guys made as a group, or was it kind of each individually you made it and it just happened that everyone sort of agreed?
Both.
Okay.
It came in waves.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah. We had two different mailing lists for discussions. We had one that included the SysCon people, and then we had one for just the editors. And so the discussion started there, and it was a matter of, when do we have the critical mass to say as a group we were going to do something?
I mean, frankly, what happened was on Monday, the timeline of this is what we said on Monday was, it's Maureen or us. You know, you either keep her or you keep us.
Okay.
And when we had heard nothing, that pretty much that exact press release had been ready to go out Tuesday morning.
We thought it was going out Tuesday morning.
Right. And we had pretty much all the editors had signed off at that point. And
so
then,
what was your expectation
at
that point? Did you assume one way or the other? Or
we
as far
thought
as who would go?
She wasn't going to go.
Right.
Really?
Because in the past, Fouet had been very supportive of her and had not been responsive to her comments. So our assumption was he was not going to, you know, see our side of things, and we would have to go. And then we were shocked, yeah, that he did decide to let her go. And then we had to find out exactly what did that mean. Did it mean that no new material getting? There was about a day of just total confusion about what it meant between us, between them, and between the Linux community. And then it became pretty clear by about Wednesday that it was going to settle in a way we could be happy with. And we started, in fact, you know, a lot of us were getting articles in for the magazine on Wednesday and Thursday because we had to put it to bed. It was the end of the month. I put 3 articles in the magazine on Thursday. So.
Oh, wow.
And then Friday hit.
And then Friday hit, yes.
So let's cover that interview a little bit. In the interview, Fouad seemed to defend the publishing of the article and even went as far to say that he had personally been the one that approved it.
Right, and this all completely gels with private conversations. I won't quote, but he was very consistent in that. You know, he didn't see anything wrong with it. He had personally been okay with it going up. He had personally okayed it to go up. He didn't see the big deal.
The one quote that I have from the article is, and this is quoting Fouad, as I mentioned above, if we thought that there was anything wrong with the story, factually, professionally, ethically, or legally speaking, we would have not run it in the first place.
Right.
So that is pretty much congruent with offline conversations then?
Yeah. My understanding is that he now has a better understanding, unfortunately too late.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, some life lessons are learned the hard way, and I think, I mean, I don't, I'll make the statement because there's been a lot of very bad will in the community toward Fouet this week. I don't think he's in bed with SCO. I don't think he's an evil person. I think he's someone who got in over his head.
Okay.
And all of the people who could have explained to him internally were gone.
Okay. Because I notice if you go to that article now, there actually is an update, which it seems like he kind of did have a change of heart. And it says he now understands what was wrong, and he apologizes.
Tony Mobley is still, like terrible. He feels like he started a revolution by accident.
Right. So what's your response to that?
I actually had a conversation with him, and he felt so bad about this because he was trying to give Fouad a chance to explain himself, and you know it just turned into a disaster, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but James has actually spoken to Fouad on the phone about this, and I haven't. So James has a better feel.
Right.
For where Fouad stands right now.
Is your opinion that at this point it's kind of too little, too late?
I think so, because, I mean, really, you know, there's a few issues here. For one, I really feel that, you know, we, as a team of about 14 people, have the collective wisdom to really, I think, have some respectful and worthy opinions on the topic. And yet we were completely ignored. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is over months. You know, but also just as much as if you could get a chance to talk to him personally and maybe feel that he's changed his mind, it would be hard to convince the general community that he really understands.
That's what it really comes down to in the end is at a certain point, it can sound a little bit selfish, but you have to think about your own reputation.
And that's all we get from them.
Right. I mean, we really went out on a limb to say, to come back in kind of from the ledge, to use 2 metaphors at once there. And say, we're gonna work with you to try and resolve this situation. And we really, I mean, I felt that we had a very short window to convince the community, who are also our readership, by the way, and are our advertisership, whatever the collective for that is, that we really meant it. I read all over the place. I could see there was a lot of, maybe they're going to change, but I'm still seeing Maureen's stuff on the site. When is it going to go away? And, maybe they're just trying to string us along. And so we were kind of in this position where we're trying to be in the middle and keep both sides happy. And then.
Well, and especially we were trying to make sure that we personally believed it was going to change. because, as we said, we haven't had a lot of control over what happens. And sometimes Syscon doesn't have a lot of control because it's so heavily automated.
Okay.
So sometimes we would get her stuff removed and it would actually appear again.
Right.
This constant battle. So we were trying to make sure that we really believed it was going to change, because you don't want to stand sitting there going, oh, it's going to change, it's going to change, and look like idiots.
Sure.
So by that Friday, had figured everything's going to be okay.
Right. I mean, believe me, here's another one of these great caught out of position things. I went at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, East Coast time. I went out to get a babysitter because it was my 25th high school reunion that night, and my doctor had cleared me to go to it. So I was out of position, out of contact for the next 7 or 8 hours, and I came home at midnight.
It's me having posted saying, look at this interview from Fua.
Yeah, so.
Oh, so you weren't even around when the interview hit. You actually weren't online when the interview hit.
Oh, no.
In fact, I heard about it through another journalist.
Oh, wow.
So we're just sitting there going, okay.
And frankly, you know, I was kind of looking at this and saying, okay, what pieces of my career are going to survive this? Because it was just, you know, it's just, it became the train is leaving and we have to be on it. There's just, you know.
I mean, we're trying not to be, the hard part is you want to react emotionally, and this does you and no or nobody else any good. So the kind of the few of us who even knew about it, the collective decision was, well, let's just post on our blog saying we're aware, not happy, but give us a moment to process and actually to talk to each other before people start calling for our heads, okay?
Right, and by the way, in another great piece of timing, the editor-in-chief had just left for a business trip and was out of communications.
Seems like there's a lot of bad timing
in
the story.
His vacation and tell him about the interview. James had to read it to him over the phone.
Yeah, at 3 in the morning.
Oh, wow. So it seems like there's quite
so
a bit of a story.
This poor guy sitting in the hotel room, his like guts churning, like, oh, my God.
And the person I really feel sorry for is Martin Brown, he's the Lamp editor, or was the Lamp editor, because he had been on vacation all week.
He didn't even know about the first problem.
Right. He came back to a couple of hundred emails on Saturday morning.
Wow.
And he's in Europe, so. I just want to say that we also feel sorry for Jeremy Gielen, who was our publisher. He's a paid Syscon employee, but he was one of the people gone.
Right. He was the guy in Istanbul.
So he was. Okay. Fuat is the CEO of Syscon. Jeremy is the actual title of publisher.
Okay.
So Jeremy lost us, not even knowing it, not like without any chance to do anything about it. So
quite
that was really
side.
Unfortunate.
I've been saying that the moon was just in weird last week.
Yeah, it was a bizarre, bizarre week. I keep looking at my calendar expecting to see a full moon on there, but I don't. Actually, Friday the 13th?
Yeah, Friday the 13th.
Monday the 8th was Sunday the 8th was a full moon. So, no. But it was Friday the 13th, so.
So, moving back to the story, it seemed to me, at least at the time of this that he did the interview, that the only reason that he did end up pulling the articles from O'Gara were due to the denial of service attacks, and not really because he thought that the articles were wrong or incorrect.
That was one reason we walked.
Right. But I have to say, you also have to, I mean, I can be a little empathetic to the situation. The question of whether it was a DOS or not has not been answered, although we've seen some very fragmentary log files.
Stern feels there was a somewhat lame DOS. Right. However, the Syscon sites have never handled Slashdot particularly well, and there were multiple Slashdots.
Right.
So it was a combination of a kind of a lame denial of service attack along with other things.
But in any event, you know, the end result was that for most of the week, the sites were down.
Okay.
Or at least extremely unavailable.
So it was hard to even make fixes.
Right.
People are like, when it's going to go down, they're like, well, we can't even get to the sites, so how can we take it down?
Right. But I think the other thing is, I you know, as I understand it, that interview was done quite late at night. and was edited quite late at night. Because they had an opportunity to review it. I think they were reviewing it in the wee hours in the morning.
And somehow I think Suat thought it was damage control. Because he insisted to go up right away.
Honestly, you know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to get inside his head and try to figure out what he thought he was doing. The real issue for us, because that's really idle speculation. The real issue is how it appeared, and at a certain point, it does become about perception.
Right.
Yeah.
You guys still there?
Yep.
So he had mentioned that it said, "We are trying to recover from the biggest cyber attack in history any media company was ever subject to." Do you think that's an accurate statement?
I thought that was a little bit of hyperbole there. I think that,
Although I have to say, 3 slash droppings in 1 week is pretty close to a nuclear explosion. Although, amusingly, our blogs, which were what were directly pointed to, I don't
we're
think
fine.
They stayed up. And that's
but they were just a different company.
Right. But, you know, the other factors, I don't think it was even so much the slash jotting, it's just everybody looking for the article. The original kind of dirty article that started it all. And
a lot of us didn't want to link to it when we talked about it because we did not want to encourage the information to be perpetually leaked.
Sure.
If it was really her information. Because we obviously, you know, even if I knew it was, I certainly wouldn't say so. And if I don't know, you know, you know, you don't want to encourage that kind of puerile.
Lurid is actually the term that the
Make you feel, you know, I saw a lot of people comment that they finally found and read the article and then they were sorry. They did. Because they didn't feel dirty for reading it. So it was kind of, there's a number of ethical quandaries in there. You know, do you link to something? You know, at one point, you want people to understand what you're talking about, but do you want to encourage people to go see it?
Yeah, it's a tough one there.
Do you want to encourage traffic generated as a reward for this kind of thing? People would always ask us, well, why, you know, why you still have Maria Nagara there? They didn't respect us for that. We're like, well, we don't have any control over that. We've been trying to get rid of her. But, you know, Jeremy, I mean, he made a good argument saying that we should just post a rebuttal every time one of her articles went up. And my feeling on that was, well, but that just encourages keeping her. Because that generates more traffic.
Exactly.
And at a certain point, you know, one of the things that's been very educational for me is I went off looking for journalistic ethics, let me rephrase that because it sounds like I have none. I went out looking for codified codes of journalistic ethics last week to kind of look at it more analytically. And, you know, when you start looking at the only thing that I can go by because it's the only one that I found is the Society for Professional Journalism. Has a journalistic code of ethics. And one of the things it specifically says there is a journalist's duty is to call out and to point out, I'm paraphrasing, point out bad journalism on the part of other journalists.
And this was clearly bad journalism.
Yeah.
Right.
It wasn't journalism at all.
I think that's the one thing that no one really debates here.
Well, so some people I've actually seen some discussion online where people are either saying, you know, it's no worse than anything else, which is never a justification.
That doesn't make it good.
Or saying, you know, they're trying to somehow say, you know, Pam Jones said X, so this means we get to say Y. But it just, there are a number of faults with Maureen's article on a number of different levels. If you go to my blog, at one point I called out exactly what it's almost like the construction of it without actually using the text.
I mean, first thing she calls PJ is a harridan.
not a good
thing. Right. So it sets the tone for the whole article right there.
And
you know,
it doesn't get much better.
A lot of people prefer to go get a dictionary, but aside from that, you know, it just, that's not journalism. That's an opinion.
Right. I mean, my dad, who has been out of journalism school for 40 years and never practiced as a journalist, you know, was up enough to immediately say, you never mix editorial content and investigative journalism. You know, if you're writing a commentary piece, it's a commentary. If you're writing investigative journalism, you use a whole different set of rules.
Yeah, so it's just been a very interesting ride in the last week.
Yep.
Yeah, it seems like it. I'm going to pull one more issue from that interview, and then we can move on.
Sure.
He mentioned that some people have a problem with Linux sites that run Microsoft ads, and this is definitely, you know, something that I think the community is kind of fractured on. What's both of your
take? Yeah, this happens all over the web.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Linux Today has had, you know, had people calling for boycotts and had their problems, and it's certainly not something that's in any way SysCon specific. What's your opinion on Linux sites that run Microsoft ads?
Microsoft is a huge advertiser, and sites have to eat and survive. My opinion, let me put it this way. I can speak to one particular situation in which SysCon should actually be applauded and that I was involved in. Microsoft approached them with an ad that I won't discuss the contents of, but let's just say it was not exactly fair. Not a straightforward, you know, fair ad. I was having dinner with one of the ad sales or one of the salespeople for SysCon. Pardon?
And it's an echo.
Okay. He explained to me what was going on, and he asked for my opinion on it because they were kind of in a debate at SysCon whether to run this ad in a Linux World magazine, and they actually it was a unanimous decision at SysCon not to run it. So you have to have some ethics as far as the kind of ads you'll run. But after a certain point, as much as I personally, when I teach about Linux and I talk about Linux at conferences and I write about Linux or whatever, usually I don't mention Microsoft at all. Because, frankly, I'm not there to talk about Microsoft. I'm there to talk about Linux. It's a hard call. Usually the best thing you can do is separate ad sales from editorial, which is what they do at Linux Today, for example.
Right. That is almost a universal throughout the industry. The advertisers talk to the editorial and vice versa because it's just way too easy to get into conflict of interest.
Yeah, the moment editorial starts setting rules for the ad salespeople can start setting rules for editorial.
Right. I was going to say, and that is a very sound policy in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a dangerous, dangerous line across. While sometimes you have to watch out the kinds of ads, it's hard. It's harder than people want to make it out to be.
But
people
on the
want
other
everything
hand,
to be black and white, and it's not.
Right. On the other hand, there are two aspects to this. One is, if Microsoft is running ads on the Linux World website, say, you got to realize the other thing is Microsoft is buying ads on SysCon. They're buying it throughout the entire site, which includes, Macromedia Developer and things like that. They may have targeted ads right at the Linux World site because sometimes they do those kind of targeted buys.
We wouldn't know.
Right. But my feeling about that is, given the propensity of the Linux community to totally ignore Microsoft advertising, every dollar spent on advertising Microsoft products on a Linux site is $1 less for their patent attorneys. the other thing to consider is as the counter case to that, go sometime and try go to American Airlines and say, hi, I'm running, I'm from Delta and I'd like to place a full page ad in your in-flight magazine and see how far you get.
Well, that's kind of the competing argument to the editorial shouldn't talk to sales.
Well, I'm just saying that you can quote cases that go the other way. My personal philosophy is, trying to advertise to Microsoft and his community is banging your head against the wall. And all it does is enrage the community toward Microsoft more. I don't really think there's a lot of people out there who are going to go to, Linux Journal or Linux Day or something for hard-hitting Linux articles and say, my God, Microsoft is saying I'm wasting money. What have I been doing my entire life,
I've actually complained on Linux Journal in the past for accepting sexist advertising. that would be
here's
more,
the
you know.
Issue that I kind of had with it, and I have turned down, considerable revenue for Microsoft ads for Linux questions. And we run a lot of articles on, say, how to migrate or, you know, cost of ownership and things like that that aren't necessarily aimed just at the Linux community, but may be aimed at CTOs and kind of IT decision makers. So I would accept an ad for, say, Visual Studio or Windows as a product or Office as a product. The ones that I won't accept are like the Get the Facts ads, because I think
right.
they're, you know,
again,
completely
fair.
Put the Linux community and Linux as an OS in a light that I think is blatantly and patently incorrect.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly kind of my point.
Right. It's always the privilege of a publisher to say to an advertiser, if you're going to run this ad in our magazine with these statements or these claims, we want you to back them up before you run it. You know, just because we believe we want to make sure that you're not running a distorted
ad. Or change the ad. We won't take this. I mean, I'm sure it's in all the contracts, all the advertising contracts. I've never actually seen one myself.
Yeah, I mean, we don't live on that side of the fence.
Yeah.
So.
Okay,
but, I mean, you look at Rolling Stone that refused to carry some religious advertising recently. That's really a controversial decision. You know, there's advertising. It's always, it's hard because magazines in particular, and print media in particular, magazines are not a profitable, not really, a very profitable enterprise. Magazines are very difficult to run in any kind of profitable manner. Websites, I don't think it's quite as a fine line. I'm sure for a lot of people it is. But it's a different model, different model for websites. But still, everyone's got to eat. So
ideally.
I think sometimes people forget that.
Okay, I'll move on then. Mark Hinkle, who is the editor-in-chief, released a statement on the Linux World site on, I believe it was the 12th, and basically trying to mitigate the damage and do damage control. And he covered the publishing guidelines of Linux World magazine and mentioned that the editorial board members of Linux World are appointed from among the leading professionals in the Linux community. I was hoping to be able to get Mark on the show today, and if you're listening, as you can tell, he's not on the show.
He's got corporate things that kind of get in the way there.
Okay. Is it correct that
he's
still with the magazine?
He's one of the executives at Winterlin, and that creates a weird thing for him.
We have several editorial board members who are explicitly forbidden to make public statements without the clearance of their legal department or their public relations department, which makes it very difficult for these, especially for controversial matters, to get involved.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would have liked to have him here as well, but it was too complicated.
Sure.
Easier to get an honest interview without the people who are with corporate ties.
And can you verify if he is or isn't with Linux Magazine still? Linux World Magazine?
He has resigned.
He has resigned.
Yeah, he's in the middle of a careful handoff to Jeremy, as far as I'm aware. Because he's the editor-in-chief, it's not as easy for him to just run.
Right.
At least ethically.
Right, but he has tendered his resignation.
Yeah, we've
and
seen it.
And Jeremy will be taking over as editor-in-chief?
I don't know what Jeremy's
position
is.
We've been asked several times what's going to happen with the magazine. You know, it's, you know, we got the last issue out the door, and we left them at the beginning of a month. Sort of, you know, it's not like we dropped it, you know, the week before deadline. But you know, they have to figure out what the future of the magazine is.
Yeah, that's kind of their call, unfortunately. I guess.
So far, it definitely cleared things up from my point of view. I hadn't realized personally that the resignations and damage had gone quite as deep as they had.
Well, I think nobody wanted to be the person who stayed.
Sure. After a while, when 12 people are leaving, because before there had some people on the fence, and we're not going to name any names there. Don't even ask. But yeah, but I think everybody's hope for things being fixed, even though we've been promised if we went back it would be fixed, it's too late.
Sure.
I think.
Right. I mean, my feeling is, you know, I think CIFCON can get out of this. It's going to be through their actions. It's going to be very consistent action over the next, you know, 6 months or a year where they just show that they learned the lesson of this incident.
Okay, and it certainly seems like neither of you have any ill will, you know, which is good in the end.
Yeah, I mean, my problem is I'm a fixer kind of person. I want to fix everything and everyone, and so these things are really hard for me because I'm like, well, you know, do I want to just walk away? We've been working on this magazine. We birthed this magazine, so to speak, and it's our baby. You know, do we want to just walk away from it? But I also want to be able to look at myself in the mirror every day and kind of like what I see. So it becomes a, I guess it's a really good group of people we had for the magazine. And we communicated a lot. And I think that helped to an extent keep it from getting too ugly.
Right. And I mean, frankly, you know, I think the magazine, if you look at purely the magazine, you know, especially considering the resources we had to work for, which is basically us and anybody who could rope into writing for us, I think we did a pretty good job.
Yep.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think the
we're biased,
was pretty good.
I was going to say, in the interest of full disclosure, I am an editor for Linux Magazine. Although Kevin Kevin Bedell had approached me to write for Linux World Magazine before he stepped down.
Mm-hmm.
We've approached everybody who we thought might be able to write an article. As I used to say, the beast is hungry and it has to be fed every month.
So they're always looking for somebody who has something interesting to say. That's really so the readers would find interesting. Obviously, you don't want to just throw everything in there. It's not going to be a very good magazine.
Sure.
But,
well, I personally am very proud that I got a penguin wearing a bikini into the magazine.
I use that in my talks to show the ability to show multimedia stuff.
Quite the accomplishment.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to move on to a somewhat related article by John Dvorak. And I saw
God.
From your blog.
Oh,
that,
yeah. Oh, that wonderful one, yes.
Yeah, both
have you read my
you
response
read
to this?
I did read both of your responses.
Okay.
And from the listeners who aren't familiar, John Dvorak recently published an article. The title was Linux Community Implodes. And I picked out my favorite quote from the article, which is, "Oh, brother, in the olden days, O'Gara would have been given a medal for generating readership. But in today's world of the so easily offended, she's apparently let go instead, and things calm down as the hissy fit subsides."
I think a better headline for that article is "John Dvorak proved irrelevant." I mean that one paragraph proves that this guy has never been through J school.
Journalism.
I haven't either, by the way, but has never even touched a code of ethics for journalism, has no idea what's going on, and probably would be very happy at Fox News. there's my little liberal jab for the evening. But
I had actually written a completely different response to the article and then deleted it and started over. Because at first I thought he was completely excusing what Maureen had done. But then I read it again, and I realized he kind of is and kind of isn't. What he was saying is it was insane. He was nutty, was his word. That was not really the work of a sane person, perhaps. But still, saying that, you know, the easily offended part, it's like, what part of publishing your mother's address and phone number do you not get?
Right. Again, you know, I think I counted 8 separate violations of the code of ethics. It's like, you know, this wasn't like somebody who falsified like a background quote because he needed a quote to get. This is someone who just totally invaded somebody's life.
I'm not even sure this is the right person.
Right.
But here's a bunch of information you can do to harass him.
The thing that drove me nuts about his article, though, was this whole, and I blogged about this evening, so everyone will read my blog, is that...
Blame the victim, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not even the blame the victim. It's this attitude that if, you know, the analogy I gave is, if I'm a real fan of Michelle Kwan, and this guy goes and stalks Michelle Kwan, who's a real fan of Michelle Kwan, that you say all people who are fans of Michelle Kwan are stalkers. You know, the fact that there are some people in the Linux community, just like there's some people in any passionately held discussion, who go over the edge and do things that are unethical or do things that are illegal, in the case of things like a DOS, if there was a DOS, that doesn't mean the whole community is like that. And in fact, the majority of the community in this case was condemning that activity. You know, there are always some bozos on both sides of the fence who are going to take things way too far. But the strategy that Dvorak seems to be doing is say, some people are doing this, therefore everybody is like that. They're all nuts, so I can ignore them and I don't have to address the
My
valid
favorite
arguments.
Part was he said he knew he was going to get attacked by those people. Mm-hmm. I read through the comments, and most of them are very reasonable.
Right.
Maybe a couple, one or two. They're a little off, but really most of the comments are very well reasoned.
Right. But I think the other thing you have to realize is that Dvorak, like O'Gara, although not to the extent that O'Gara takes it, is in the business of being controversial and really trolling to get people to come to his site and be really angry.
See, I don't get that at all. I don't get the point of that.
It's called advertising.
Don't you think there's
an
increase in controversial content from some of the bigger players in the technology news sector that are simply, and I would say blatantly, an effort to increase hit and revenue?
Yeah. I mean, they get paid for click-throughs. Now, I have to full disclosure say there's now an AdSense banner on my site, so I get paid for click-throughs.
You're going to start posting everybody's addresses.
That's right. I'm starting with yours, Deanne.
Oh, okay. I'm waiting for O'Gara to come in.
Except I think you need sled dogs to get you, don't you?
I have four miniature ones. Yeah, I think I really have a very low opinion of people who post things just to rile people up or say things just to rile people up. I mean, you should say what you believe, I think.
Sure.
That article just struck me as very disingenuous.
Yeah. And
there's been a couple of articles like that since.
And the cat fight thing really got me.
Yeah.
That's a... Because, you know, I don't really run into a lot of sexism in the Linux community. I can go years without sexist stuff, which is actually fairly unusual for a woman working in IT, from what I understand. For the most part, I really don't encounter it. The last time I encountered it was the last time when I panned a product a lot of people like, and on Slashdot, the comments about me were very interesting.
Well, that's okay. I've had a lot of people talking about the fact that I look like Jerry Garcia. I mean, there's people...
It's an unkempt hippie.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't say on any airwaves what was said about me, so...
Right. But, you know, there are always some people who, failing any logical discourse on the subject, will find something wrong with your appearance or your sex or your race or, you know, something about you because, you know, it's kind of like on The Simpsons, you know, if all sales go, ha-ha... I don't do a very good Nelson, unfortunately.
James, you recently blogged an entry with the title Bloggers, Journalists, and Privacy. It gets to the good line.
Oh, somebody actually read it. Good.
I did. And actually, yeah. This is a topic that I'd probably like to discuss. You know, we're going a little bit long right now.
Sure.
We just hit 55 minutes. But I think this is a topic that really could be its own show. And it's something that I'm definitely interested in.
I would love to come back with some other people who have some thoughts on the subject and talk about it.
Absolutely.
Because
we could get Doc Searles has agreed to be on, so I think he might be someone good to get
on.
I'd
love to chat about
this
with Doc.
Great.
I mean, I really think I've been saying all week to people because I think there is a legitimate question to be asked about when does a blogger become a journalist? And the larger question of what is the privacy expectations that anybody reporting the news should have. I think
Definitely.
It's a perfectly reasonable conversation to have. I just think Maureen went out things totally the wrong way.
I'll definitely will talk to Doc, and I'll contact you offline and see who else you want to get in. But I think that's a discussion that I'd definitely like to have on the show. And while we're on the note of blogging, kind of in the past... consumers of news content have relied on things like editorial review and to a large part, just history of credibility to measure the amount of trust that they could lend to a particular publication. Now it seems more and more technology sites are operating as little more than opinion for rent services, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it. How would you say that a reader is supposed to gauge credibility these days? Because there definitely are some credible sites left.
Well, I think it's almost like a web of trust. If you've ever played around with public key encryption, there's a concept of the web of trust that some PKE things use, where I know that you're who you say you are, and you know, and so I trust you somewhat, and you say that that person is who they say they are, so I trust them a little bit more because I'm not quite sure, you know. And then the farther out you get, the less you trust them. I think what we're starting to see is communities of trust, or alternately, if you want to think about it, communities of single-minded views, where you can either say people are saying, you know, I read this guy and he says this guy knows what he's talking about, so I'll tend to trust what he says. The dark side of that is you can get into these environments where people, what they call the echo chamber effect, where everybody only listens to the people who agree with them. So I think it's inherent on a good media consumer to seek out a variety of views, but also see what other people who you trust are saying about them.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of, and I think this has always been true, that you have always had to build a certain amount of trust with your readership. That over time, people seem to find that, you know, they find you a reasonable person. They may not always agree with you, but they maybe find you at least logical about it. And, you know, I find, for example, Randy Castingham, the thisistrue.com. I don't know if you read his stuff. He does. He kind of lampoons abuses of the legal system all over the world. And one reason I really enjoy his stuff is he actually will change his mind. He'll post about something and kind of lampoon it. And a number of people will write in with very reasonable comments on it. And I actually one time did see him go, you know, I think maybe you're right.
I actually think that's one of the great things about blogging.
I also think this is one of the, not unique, this kind of who do you trust thing. I live, to blogging, I live right on the border between New Hampshire and Massachusetts. So I've got the Boston Globe, one of the most liberal papers in the country, just to the south of me, and the Manchester Union Leader, which is slightly to the right of Genghis Khan, just to the north of me. And on any given day, I can read in the editorial pages, you know, that either this thing is the best thing that ever happened on Earth, or this is the fall of mankind, depending on which paper I choose to read. So it's not unique to blogging that there's always spin on everything, and you always have to understand the source of where you get your information.
I think the problem is it's not just with blogs, but I think it's easier with blogs to hide your associations. And I think that's what Agara was trying to prey on with PJ. The problem is, what Agara is sidestepping with that issue is that Grocklaw is not PJ. Grocklaw is a whole bunch of people all analyzing things, and Grocklaw has to be judged on the content of Grocklaw, on whether it is accurate. You know?
Sure.
It seems to me that going after PJ says that she couldn't find enough that was wrong about Grocklaw, and so that she was instead going to try to smear PJ. That's my impression. But you have to look at what Grocklaw actually does. And I think that's the same with all blogs. You have to look at the contents and, you know, do they tend to shill? You know, do they tend to ignore reality? Do they tend to have a very convenient look at things? Do they tend to publish things that the general public isn't supposed to actually know, which is something Agara has been known to do.
Okay.
That's why she is accused of having a relation with Sko. So it's a lot of... it's hard. People need to be intelligent consumers, and we're not seeing much of that these days.
Okay. That was all the questions that I had for now. Is there anything else that either of you wanted to add or discuss?
Should we make our little announcement, Deanne?
Oh, sure.
Please do.
Yeah, we have found a new home. At least the majority of the editors. Some of the editors have decided to strike out on their own, but I would say probably 80% of the editors can be found starting soon, as soon as we get all the details going and get some content for him. writing for Brian Proffitt over at Linux Today, Linux Planet.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Glad that you guys found
that
home
out
so quickly.
And there's a number of, actually, you'd be amazed at the number of offers individually we've been getting. So we'll be appearing in other places as well. But
yeah,
it looks like that's
what
we're doing.
As I had mentioned, if any of you guys want to publish anything at linuxquestions.org, I'd be more than happy to put it up for you.
Oh, sure.
Yep.
Give me an email, and we'll talk about it.
Sure.
But yeah, that's kind of the big thing we're working on right now. Is kind of because you know it's actually a group of people I really like working with, so I think it's a good team.
Yeah, I actually ran into Brian at Linux World Canada in Toronto about a month ago.
Were you there?
Yeah, actually,
sorry,
sat down
there
to eat something, and I looked up and he just happened to be at the same table, so we started chatting a little bit.
Funny.
Yeah, I mean, it was very important for us moving from the current situation that we go somewhere where we didn't feel like we were going to have to deal with another crisis anytime soon.
Yeah.
And Brian definitely gives us that feeling.
Yeah, I've worked with Brian quite a lot in the past. And that's kind of, I guess I should have said that when I was talking about Linux Today and the Microsoft ad issue. Because I've worked with Brian quite a lot. He actually got me into journalism. We're kind of just hammering out the details, and he's it's one of those things where we're all so aware of what happened before that we're being very careful to actually discuss everything up front. That should probably be happening soon, hopefully. Oh, yeah, because I live in rural Canada. I guess we miss each other.
Oh, you were there also?
Yeah, I was kind of half asleep the whole time, so I woke up to do my talks.
Okay, I ran into Kevin there also.
Yeah. That's funny. I talked to a couple of people who it turns out that were there that I just totally missed. I was off in zombie land. I wasn't sleeping well.
And by the way, since I mentioned it about 97 times during this thing, you can find my blog at turner.blog-city.com. And you can find Deanne as d.blog.
No. Deanne. D-Anne.
Oh, you changed
it. .blogcity.com. I can't get D. If you go to D-E-E.blogcity.com,
yep,
you'll get this lovely pink thing. Very frightening. It was taken. Well, Deanne for me.
Okay. Well, I do want to thank you both for being on the show, and I look forward to seeing your articles at Linux Today and hopefully something up at LQ.
Okay.
All right. Take care.